Hello and welcome to the Care Exchange, the Skills for Care podcast for managers and social care. I'm PRF Day Burton.
And I'm Wendy Adams. Today we're talking to Maddie Watts. Maddie is the owner and registered manager of Inchwater Home Care in Dover, Kent. Maddie's owned and run Inchwater Home Care with her husband, Paul, since 2012 and employ approximately 60 staff. Previous to that, they owned and operated a residential care home for people with a learning disability for about 21 years. Inchwater is currently rated overall outstanding by CQC, and this is a rating that they've been awarded twice.
So we will be talking to Maddie about the CQC single assessment framework. The guidance information from CQC are continually changed and being updated. While introducing the new framework. So just be aware that everything we talked to Maddie about today is correct as of March 2024. So let's have a good chat to Maddie on with the show. So, hello Maddie, welcome to the Care Exchange.
Hi Pia, thank you for having me. It's been, Let's hope, I can share some interesting information with you.
I'm sure you can. I'm really looking forward to chatting to you. So we heard an introduction there. You are a registered manager for Inchwater Home Care and you're currently rated overall outstanding by CQC, which is always something to celebrate.
Thank you. Yes.
So I wanted to start by asking you a question that probably is on the mind of a lot of registered managers at the moment. So how are you preparing for your next CQC inspection under the single assessment framework?
Okay, so we've read them, we've looked at them, we've talked about them, and we've looked at those quality statements and try to pick on a few and dig a bit deeper. It's about how you record that evidence. I've been working on staff well-being, which is quite a hot topic within within a lot of places of work, and I've been looking at about doing little well-being assessments with people about, are they happy, what makes them happier, can we alter the way that we work to put something back within what they like to do. And you find the most bizarre things through setting out little sort of assessment, the risk assessments for well-being. I have a member of staff, for example, who she's a triathlete and likes to compete occasionally at the weekend, always on a weekend on and things like that. But it's about us recognising that's what puts her in a good headspace. We need to make those adjustments.
Yeah.
And there's someone else who I hadn't realised that she goes to book club the first Wednesday of every month. Well, every care coordinator will know that when you're planning for shifts, the first Wednesday of every month doesn't go into the computer. The fourth Wednesday of every month would. So it means that someone's just got to go through and alter all those things. And I can do that, so she can go to book club, and that's great. And it's little things like that where you feel that you can show that you've made small adjustments that have made big improvements for your staff.
So how do you evidence those two things?
Well, that's the issue. So it's about somebody writing down what we've done. So I fill in a little form with the staff, usually at supervision, and we talk through some of these things. So what puts you in a good headspace? And then we've got the evidence, we've collected that information, and then it's about writing on the bottom of those sheets to say that this is what we've done about it. Yeah. There is your evidence in the staff file. It's not as simple as that, because with some people there's more to it, I suppose. But it's about showing that you've made an effort and that you are keen to try. I mean, there's other things we've done around staff wellbeing that a couple of us have trained as mental health first aiders, which is a little course that it just gets you to think about people and how you can point them in the right direction for help.
So but when you're thinking about, sorry, when you're thinking about that preparing for CQC, is that different to how you would normally prepare?
So
the well-being is because it's a new quality statement, but kind of looking after staff, it may not have been so explicit in the old standards, but you know, with a single assessment framework, it obviously there's a quality statement and a well-being, but is overall, when you think about the overall preparation that you're doing, is that different now to what it was?
I think it's more precise. We have drilled down a bit more, and we have said, this is what we're going to do. I mean, we are very sort of flexible in our approach, and we do change things if we feel that things aren't working, but it's showing that we've done that, and they could be things that we've normally always done. We just haven't recognized it and recorded it and evidenced it. So that's what we need to do. And it's about thinking of things like that. And sometimes it's about tweaking some paperwork. So you're adding another question in, or you're recording something at that touch point to show that you've thought about the slightly bigger picture or something that's more specific. I mean, we won't know how it works with CQC until a lot more inspections have been done and there is a lot more evidence. Because I always say to people, you know, you need to read CQC reports to look at what sort of topics they're looking at the moment and what's important to them, and things do change, and how does that affect us? The recording of the evidence is a big issue, because I think we don't do enough of it, and I believe that there's people out there that may not do a lot of it at all, and it's about how we collate the information into something that is presentable to CQC, because you can guarantee you'll fill up a big fat file full of stuff and then you've got to have to scan it all in to get it across to them, it's not quite what they're looking for, and they're not going to sift through the A4 lever arch files full of all the wonderful things that you've done. They want you to collate it for them into those areas. And some bits of evidence fall under several quality statements.
Yeah.
And it's recognizing that one bit of paper doesn't fit in one slot. It could cover an awful lot. And it's trying to break those down so you've got good coverage of all quality statements.
And I suppose and it's interesting you're saying about lever arch files, and I know that a lot of managers have used those in the past, but my impression is that CQC are much more digital now. So as we speak, we don't know if evidence is going to be starting to be collected via the portal. But there's definitely much more about providing electronic evidence. So having a lever arch file, as you say, you would have to start preparing for that so that your evidence isn't just in.
So we do some digital formats of evidence files, things that we have emails and things, and there's bits that we have scanned in that we're quite proud of, or it shows a very clear approach to what we've done. It is difficult because you don't know how much reading are they going to do before an inspection or during an inspection. How much of this stuff are they going to sift through to say that's the evidence that we require? Because it may be that some of the evidence that you gather that you're very proud of just doesn't meet their criteria. It just isn't, I don't know, deep enough, or it's that you haven't, it's just not quite right, or you've been a bit glib of how you've written it or something like that. So it's about knowing what the acceptable standard is. And we only can do that by trying. And it's about finding evidence in different ways. I mean, I'm a keen advocate for reflection and looking at lessons learned and things like that. But when you talk to people about thinking about lessons learned. People always think that there's been a problem. It doesn't have to be. There's some really good stuff that people do that actually, if you sat down and said, that worked really well, and we should do that again. I mean, it's about showing that it's that strive for continual improvement. And it doesn't have to be coming from a negative for you to improve. It could have been a really positive experience. And actually, the icing on the cake would be if we had done so and so. And that's what you're striving towards. And when you've iced your cake, there's always a cherry to go on top. It's about looking for that, because it is a constant strive for improvement. It's not something that you just achieve and you're there and everyone breathes again. It is pushing forward all the time.
And that's really interesting, because one of the things that we do know is that CQC are going to focus much more on gathering evidence and feedback from people who use our services. Mm. And actually, that's not always going to be about the big things. No. You know, sometimes that might be about making improvements about some of the smaller things. As you said, not necessarily CQC aren't just going to be interested in where somebody's made a complaint and you've resolved that.
Yeah.
They want to see that journey to continuous improvement. This can be a real challenge, I think, for some services, to think about how to gather that feedback so it does become about continuous improvement more than a once-a-year survey. Have you given any thoughts as to how you're going to do that?
Yeah, well, we do. We've been looking at our survey questions, actually. Our staff survey was in at the end of last year, and our client survey will go out reasonably soon. It's about what you do with the information that comes in, because I feel that if you're going to put together this exercise to gather this information, you've got to show that you've done something with it. And it's that process afterwards where you say, right, this is what you've said, this is what we're going to do about it. So you can show that actually it was worth their while filling in their form or whatever it was, or making some comments. And that's very important. Working with the evidence, it's a bit like, I don't know, writing a risk assessment and just sticking a flag in it, but we're not actually acknowledge how you're going to mitigate it. And then people sometimes complain about the daftest of things, and that we can change those. That's not a problem.
Yeah. And I suppose the other thing with a action from a survey, because you might not do all the actions straight away, you might do some of them in a few months' time, it's reminding people that, you know, the reason why we're now changing this, because it's what you asked us to do in a survey, isn't it, really?
So, yeah.
Because I think sometimes, you know, no experience with myself, you know, I fill in the staff survey, you know, and you see the results come out, and then about 6 months later, the change is happening. You think, oh, why are they making that change? And if somebody actually said, oh, we're making this change because that's for the overall majority of staff, in my instance, have asked for, you know, you kind of forget. But I think it's interesting what you were saying, Wendy, because it's not just about surveys, it's also about that, because these the new evidence categories, so there's three which are focused on feedback. So there's feedback of people that you're supporting and feedback of staff, and that's, you know, gathering evidence around those regularly, not just in surveys. It's going to be a challenge and something, a different, when you're thinking about collecting evidence, a different type of evidence, isn't it? That is, you know, collecting evidence ongoing on feedback from the people that you're working most closely with. That have you ever any thoughts about how to do that? So kind of more than the survey, as opposed to what we're saying.
Well, we do a client review every 3 months where we talk to them, and that's a good way of gathering feedback. And so our staff have supervisions, appraisals, staff meetings, that kind of thing. So it's that, it's about gathering that evidence and trying to put some of those things into practice to say that you've listened to them. And it's, and sometimes it's about the little things that really annoy people that you can change, and it's all good. And an example I give was we had a client who, it was fairly difficult to park, but she had a drive. But if you parked on her drive, you were parked very close to her rather beloved roses, and she didn't want you to knock any petals off. So she didn't want the staff to park there. It was just a case of us looking at the area, finding somewhere else for the park to for the staff to park, and her roses were then safe. And we always made a point of saying how beautiful they were, and she said yes, because no one's knocked the petals off. I think it's as you brushed past them. But it was really important to her. Yeah. But recognising that that was really important, her beloved roses, we were able to do something about it. And that's not, people will think, well, that's not a big deal. That's a really pathetic example. But actually, it's not, because if you add all those up, she was very happy.
Yeah.
It is the little things that sometimes make the biggest difference.
Yeah.
And for managers, it's about how you capture that, isn't it? Because
yeah.
I suspect in lots of organisations, those sorts of things happen all the time. You know, something happens, somebody will say, oh, I'd really rather you didn't do that, or I'd really rather you didn't do this. The staff go, oh yeah, that's fine, that's no bother, change it, and it just never gets recorded. And that's all this stuff about being responsive, isn't it? And actually making changes. By the time that person comes to fill in their annual survey, they've probably completely forgotten about that small thing, or would think it's too small to put on the survey. But it's those changes that make a real difference to people's lives.
So maybe having some sort of, I don't know,
summary
of feedback this week or something.
Yeah, I constantly have a notebook on my desk where I jot down the daftest of things, but it's those that add up, really. It is showing that responsive to the service that you're providing.
So the other one, in terms of feedback, the other new evidence category that's now is about feedback from partners. And that can be really, really tricky to gather. Have you had any thoughts about how you're going to start doing that?
Well, for a long time, we've had little cards that say thank you. And with it, you know, on occasion, we would send one out to, I don't know, a set of district nurses that have really pulled it out of the bag for us with someone at home. And we need to use those more. We need to provide them with that written feedback. So hopefully they'll be better at giving us written feedback. There's a particular receptionist at a doctor's surgery that has really helped us in the last couple of weeks over someone who'd been really quite unwell and had got things sorted with the pharmacy. And we wrote a little thank you card to her to say, we really appreciate your efforts. And she was gobsmacked. And I didn't like to say at the time, well, I hope that perhaps, you know, if we ever pull it out of the bag for you, it would be reciprocated. But actually, that's what CQC want. They want us to be more forward thinking with each other and perhaps nicer, and pointing out the fact that I really appreciate that. That was very kind of you. We need to start, really.
So we
have done it for a while, but we haven't done it. I suppose we haven't really been on top of it so much, but we definitely are this year. But it also gets your name out there, because what you don't want is CQC to say to, I don't know, the district nurses, a feedback on inch water, and for them to go, who? You want them to say, oh, yes, actually, yeah, and to take it from there. People need to know who you are.
Yeah.
I think that's a really nice idea. I think you're right. You know, if you then need to get some feedback from them, it would be very hard, wouldn't it, for her to say, I'm not going to give you any feedback when you'd sent her such a lovely card. So, you know, from a cynical point of view, that's really, it's a good idea in terms of gathering your own evidence for CQC.
Yeah.
But actually, what a really nice thing to do anyway, because I would suspect that receptionists, like many of us working in the sector, don't have very many people who say thank you to us. And you know, I would imagine she's probably in a similar position to many of us, which is that people don't always feel appreciated. So you know, a good thing to do anyway, really.
Yeah, of course, they're rated by CQC as well, so they would be very happy to receive that kind of feedback. As you say, they hopefully will do the same for you. And I suppose it's just about keep reminding partners. This is going to be really important for all of us, because obviously the whole point of the single assessment framework was that it was the one framework for everybody, I think in social care for the registered manager, obviously it's really, really, you know, secrecy is very forefront of their minds. It may not be so forefront on a receptionist or a GP surgery or district nurse, because they may not be aware of it. But if it's reminding, you know, you're being secrecy rated as well, so am I. Let's make sure that we kind of give each other feedback, and feedback can be positive as well as negative.
Yeah, I suppose, I don't know, I always say it's because we're British. We're not great at saying, wow, well done, thank you, that's great. But yeah, but we're very good at saying, well, actually, I'm not very happy about this. And it's altering that, isn't it? And it's, but you could send emails, it makes no odds. I mean, we just have to have some cards printed.
Nothing in the card is nice.
I'll let you know in a year's time when I've sent out a lot. But it's also about having those thank yous on display, isn't it, that you get from families and feedback. And there are times that you need to make a point of showing staff that have worked with that particular client, perhaps, to say, you know, this is aimed at you. I'm holding on to the card, but, you know, the sentiment is because of your hard work.
Yeah.
And actually also, I think, about thinking about quite broadly who your partners are, because we tend to think all right, partners for social care, we think health, but what about all of the other partners that you have in your local community, like schools, or, you know, there's a whole range of things, isn't there? And that's what you're saying, isn't it, about that actually sometimes the evidence might overlap across several different statements.
But my other issue with health is there's tons of little teams out there that you think, who the heck are they? And that gives you the opportunity to go and have a dig round to think, well, who knew that there was this particular team that did so and so?
Yeah.
But, you know, that you can then link with, and it's unpicking all those bits, I suppose. And I don't know, there was something up. I needed some help from a district nurse, and she'd put me onto the community nurse. And I'm thinking, are you not the same person? Well, obviously they weren't, and I needed to go away and work out what the difference was. And they were very helpful.
You learn every day in this job, don't you?
Absolutely.
It's interesting what you're saying about partners, because you have things like the Charity of the Year, and you also have connection with your local food bank and things like that, because that's partnership, isn't it?
Yeah, we do have a Charity of the Year. We were with Macmillan last year, and it's the local hospice this year. Yeah, we do a lot for the food bank, because that's important. And people sometimes will say, well, actually, is the food bank, you know, a suitable, you know, local charity to support? Yes, it is. They need our help, and actually, it doesn't cost us anything. We have a box. We ask people to donate, and people would, you know, drop in a. We seem to be inundated with rice pudding at the moment, for example. But it's something that we can promote, and make a difference to our local community. It's trying to find things like that show that you. Yes, it's about you partner up with other people, don't you? And people are going to be thinking, oh gosh, this all takes time, but actually it doesn't. You just the food bank collects from us, which makes life a lot easier, I just give them a ring when it's full. But it does make a difference.
And I suppose for home care, sometimes it could be quite hard for you know, home care providers to show that they're part of their local community, because, you know, with a care home, you know, you have walls, don't you? You have people, you know, you have people, the people you're supporting are there within the walls, and therefore it's easier to kind of show that community connection, where, you know, this seems like a really good way of doing the same thing, isn't it? You know, that you've got a box and you're supporting the local community with this food bank. So that sounds a really great idea.
But you could also join in with local, I don't know, fates and things like that. We've done that in the past, and you're an information provider, although you may be promoting yourself at the same time, but you're also providing information, and people are very keen to have that there.
Yeah. I wanted to go back to something Wendy was saying earlier about reflection. So why do you think reflection is important?
I suppose it's like lessons learned, isn't it? But lessons learned makes it sound as though something is really big. Reflective is about looking back. How did that go? What went well? What went not so well? What could be done better? How could we change that? And sometimes, you know, the answer is, you know, not a lot. And sometimes it's actually, it allows you to think and change your practice. And it's that that strive for improvement. And it can be really simple things, and it can be sometimes quite big things. Mm-hmm. And especially with experiences that perhaps don't happen every day, every week, every month. It's about making it, looking to make those changes. And I mean, I was thinking about some of this before in the run-up to us having this conversation, and I was talking to some colleagues about, you know, in reflection, what have we changed recently, and they were laughing, and they said that the on-call had been called out because we had someone that wasn't very well. And the reflective practice is the lessons that we learned is that there needs to be some coffee in the on-call bag because it had all got fairly dire. And I said, you know what? There is now coffee in the on-call bag. That's what we learned from that. Okay. Oh, that happened a week or two ago. And they were laughing about it because I said, well, you know, what else? What have we changed from some reflective practice? A reflective practice doesn't have to be written down. It can be just a conversation, and then you write down the important bits if anything comes out. And so sometimes nothing comes out of those reflective conversations, but it needs to happen, and it probably does happen, but it needs to happen in a way that you can do something with it. There is no point in people going home at night and talking to their partner or their family, because they can't do anything. They, you know, you don't work with them, and listening to you rabbit on about this, that, and the other. And actually, if you'd have done it with your colleagues, it allows them to be able to think, well, we can do something about that. And if you know, if that little something is making sure there's some coffee in the on-call bag, life is better.
Yeah.
Well, absolutely. I feel that links right back to what you started talking about well-being, doesn't it?
Yes.
You got to be on call, at least have a good coffee.
The lack of coffee was affecting somebody's well-being. Yeah.
So how do you make time for reflection? Because your managers are very time poor, and they will probably somebody think, oh, I don't have time for reflection. It will take forever. You know, I don't have time for things like that. How do you make time for it?
I think it's about if I'm ever out with a colleague in the car, I make a point of talking about work. I talk about, so, you know, what we're doing, who we're going to see, why is this important? Are we doing well? Could we do better? And it puts staff in a position where they can offer their point of view. And if you think about supervisions and appraisals with staff, you know, we need to be reflecting with them and asking their point of view. They come out with some really cracking bits of things. You think, oh, I hadn't thought of that. You know, let me just write that down. It's about making those opportunities. Yeah, it does sound a bit woolly that I spend most of my day talking. It's not true, but it's about, they don't have to be long conversations. But sometimes if we have had something that's taken up a lot of time, a client or an experience, it's about sitting down with it's usually my office team, and writing something down about how did that go? Because everyone has an opinion. You may think it went really well, and someone else may be thinking that went really badly. We did not consider something, which I hadn't crossed my mind. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's about, being honest and transparent enough to be able to say that, or to say that really didn't go very well. What could we have done differently? And try and put that into practice.
Is there anything you've done to help others, you know, maybe in your office team or whatever, get into the habit of that reflective practice as well? Because it's one of those things that I think comes easier to some people than others.
Yeah. So we tend to, we have a morning meeting at 9 and talk about yesterday, last night, the weekend, what, how we're going to go forward. And then normally about 2 o'clock, just when you, after lunch, when you would like to go home now, please, and you've still got 3 hours, we'll all stop and have a cup of coffee together, and we will talk about whatever is causing us an issue, is the wrong way, is whatever is our top priority. And we will reflect on that. And it's, sometimes it's just nice to have that 10 minutes where you bounce a few ideas around and you think, oh, I hadn't thought of that. And yeah. I suppose it's culturally we have developed one where we do a lot of reflection, and reflection is a very good way to learn because it improves your practice. It changes your practice, because not only are you having to think very quite carefully about and deeply about what you've done, other people are also thinking about that, and it's about what they bring to the table.
Yeah. Is there some questions you ask yourself and your team when you're doing the reflection?
I always talk about what went well. And then, because I don't like using negatives, I talk about what went, in brackets, not so well. You know, what could we have done better? You know, so if this happens again, what would we do differently? Yeah. And sometimes it can be really quite woolly that, you know, what would we have done differently? It may have been having that conversation with a healthcare professional earlier. You know, would that be practical? Would we have got through, et cetera, et cetera? And sometimes it's about we would have thought about something sooner. And it was about how we would implement that. And it is usually trying to, around medical help and things like that, how do you try and get that point across? Perhaps we weren't strong enough with our approach. I don't know. Yeah. It does vary.
It's good questions, though, to ask. And I was thinking when you were saying you meet at 2, you know, so I know there's some services will have like a 10 or 2 or something like that, you know, they'll have a little slogan around it, you know, and I suppose in residential services you might have a handover. So just kind of weaving in, you know, when you have those kind of quick meetings, you know, what are our priorities today? What's gone well? What could we have improved on? And it doesn't have to be something that's, you know, added on to your day. It's just something that's including in your normal everyday communication, isn't it? And then evidencing it, going back to your point at the beginning, you know, then thinking of a way, what can we, you know, if we have an ongoing improvement plan, or is there some way of us evidencing that we are having these conversations and this is what comes out of it, and this is what how the quality is improved for the people we are supporting.
I think so. It's it comes down to how do you evidence them, because sometimes you can reflect and just go around a great big circle and nothing quality has come out of it. So do you record that one, or do you just move that to one side? It's it's a difficult one.
It's finding a middle way, isn't it? I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about culture in social care, and particularly in home care, because that can be sometimes a bit more tricky to find a, you know, to A, make sure that you, you know, kind of work on the, having a good culture within your staff too, but also kind of measuring that in home care, because your staff are sort of kind of out in the community working and you're in the office and it's them and us, and, you know, how do you know how everybody's feeling? What's your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I have a bit of a bee in my bonnet about culture, because you are fostering a positive culture. It is something that you create, and it is a reflection on us as a business that we have a good culture. We have a positive culture, and although my staff, when they come to work for us, you know, understand our values and our beliefs and what our mission is, culture is a different one. It's about getting them to experience that. And I feel that, especially in dom care, positive and good culture comes from good communication. It's about how you talk with your staff, how you engage with them, and how you how you support them. And you can't teach good culture, but you can promote it. You can get them to experience it. And it may be that they don't recognize that I enjoy working here because there is a positive and good culture at work, but they know that there's something right. And you can't demand that people or teach people to be positive at work, but you can provide a positive place for them to work. And that is part of, I think that's a very important point, that the work needs to be a positive place. I don't want to use the word happy because, you know, we do a difficult job at the best of times, but the issue, if you've got a good culture, it stops that constant turnover of staff that is quite relevant in domiciliary care. Mm-hmm. And it's about getting people to I enjoy their job, enjoy their job is not quite right. It's about getting something from their job that gives them a sense of purpose. Yeah. Because sometimes domiciliary care is not enjoyable, and I take that on, but there's parts of it that are. But it's about getting people to get that feeling that they have been meaningful. And if you can get people to feel that they make a meaningful difference to other people, the culture improves. It's about they are proud of where they work and they talk to other people.
I really liked what you said about communication being key to culture, because I think in domiciliary care, one of the real challenges is it's very fast paced. You've got a lot of staff and everybody's working remotely. And because of that, I guess probably domiciliary care services use more WhatsApp or text messages as means of communicating with their staff than maybe the likes of residential services do. And one of the things that we know, not just from work life, but from personal life as well, is that messages, texts, WhatsApp messages, it's really easy for things to be misinterpreted, or alternatively, we shorten them because it's a message to the point at which maybe the person perceives it as just an instruction or quite direct. Or so that really made me think about, particularly for managers who are communicating with large numbers of staff using a messenger type approach, just how you add in some of the niceties that actually we would add in normal conversation or face-to-face conversation that I think sometimes get lost in that means of communication.
And sometimes if you're sending a text to someone, would you start with hello? And you may not do. You may just say, I don't know, laundry still in machine at Mrs. So-and-so's. And actually, and what you need to alter that, I'll pick on that one, there's one this morning like that. But, you know, up, hi, could the next person in, please, because it haven't finished yet. Thank you. And it's putting in those social niceties. And it's also that we in the office, we monitor those channels to make sure that we understand what's going on. And we will say, really appreciate you doing that. Thank you very much. And it may be that something's come in that, I don't know, could you pick up some milk for Mr. So-and-so on your way in? And it's, I really appreciate you doing that. Thank you very much. And it's about showing that it's finding that way of communicating, and it's making sure that people don't take things wrongly. It all started because we would get comments where someone went into so-and-so and they hadn't done X, Y, and Z, and I was left with all this, I don't know, mountain of ironing. And actually, if they'd have put on, I haven't been able to do the ironing, the iron's fused, family going to look at it, that kind of thing, that would have solved that problem. And it's making things just that little more transparent. And actually, that makes a real difference if you're faced with a mountain of ironing or something, or, you know, and bits and pieces like that.
The reason behind it, isn't it? You know, it's really, there was a manager I was talking to a little while ago who was saying that they send voice notes Because obviously you can do that on a particular WhatsApp, you know, to you know, sometimes instead of writing things, because they were able to kind of make it a bit more expressive, as which I quite liked, maybe not all the time, but just, you know, Friday, a bit of a, you know, hey, hello everyone, thanks for the week, you know, it's been great, you know, oh, you know, some way of making it a bit more, it's that communication again. Maybe it's really tricky when you don't, if you don't, yeah, or very often see people face to face to actually judge how people are kind of receiving your messages. And if everything is written in short form in a text, and I really like that, kind of giving a bit of an explanation about what you've done and what needs to be done and how you're doing it, then that's really good. Yeah.
And actually, we have a lot of engagement with a messaging service. People are very keen to engage. In fact, we joke that, especially when the roads are dug up and there's problems with the traffic and things like that, it all comes through, and someone in the office makes sure that everyone that's working in that area knows that there is a road closed and things like that. And it's the little things, because if someone hadn't told you and you just sat there half an hour, you would be annoyed. And actually, the information is there. We just need to, you know, to get it across, and it works really well. But it's just it's fostering that that positive way of communicating. I mean, without sounding patronising, and as I sort of go back to it, culturally, I don't think we as a race are very good at saying thank you or being kind or showing appreciation.
So we always have our time for care slot in every episode, where we ask the people that we're chatting to about what's your most time-saving tip. So we'd like to put that same question to you, because clearly you've got a lot going on. What would be your top tip?
That's actually quite a difficult question. And but I think what saves me time is that I trust other people to do their job. So I have a good team around me. I prioritise what's important to me, and I trust them to do what they need to do. But I also think that it has taken a while, learnt to switch off and I relax. And so it saves my energy. So when I am in the office, I am, you know, switched on and ready to go, rather than always feeling tired and a bit lethargic. And and I sleep a lot better now. Because I trust other people to do their job. And when I leave the office, I may talk to myself on the way, on the journey home, because it's my way of unwinding. And obviously, my husband and I own this business. We have a rule that we don't talk about work at home. And I mean, you may joke that we have nothing else to talk about, but it works very well.
Yeah.
It's a very, very clear switch off. And that has really helped. But yeah, and if you trust other people to do their job, and you have delegated and you prioritize what you've got more time. You have got so much more time.
That's great. And if you thought that question was hard, I've got our final question now, which might be even harder. I want you to imagine that we're in a lift on the 10th floor and we're going down with a group of registered managers. And before everyone gets out, you want to tell them what you think is the most important key message.
I suppose I would say something like, look after your staff. They are your best asset. Be kind, be fair. They're not your friends. They are your colleagues, but they do a very good job. And you need to be in charge of that. But I hear so often that people have had a miserable experience in domiciliary care and have gone completely off working in that sector of care. And it's because they haven't been looked after. It doesn't take much for people to feel valued. And I suppose that would be my comment, value your staff.
A really good one, and a very positive one to end on.
Absolutely. And just huge thanks from us, Maddie. It's been really, really fascinating to talk to you. And I suppose best of luck when you have your CQC inspection, because it sounds like you're well prepared for it.
Well, we have some way to go, but yeah, we're plodding on.
Yeah.
Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks for today. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was a really great conversation, wasn't it, Wendy?
Yeah, Maddie had so much interesting things to say, didn't she?
Yeah, clearly doing a lot of prep and just lots of, well, she talked about reflection, but lots of reflection about what will stay the same, what do they need to change in terms of their preparation for CQC and inspection. You can hear that, you know, obviously some of their plans hadn't been firmed up, but they were talking about, they were obviously thinking about, well, what are the things that we're going to be doing in terms of gathering evidence for our forthcoming CQC inspection under the single assessment framework. Interesting times. We've been doing a lot of work at Skills of Care around single assessment framework, and I suppose one of the things that's really worthwhile checking out if you are making plans for CQC is that we now have a seminar called Preparing for CQC Inspection. It's an all-day seminar, so all online. It's one of our costed offers, as we call them, so it's about £120 to attend plus VAT. But if you are a RSWDS account holder, you get a 10% discount. And what you get from those that whole day is you get a really sort of kind of comprehensive look at, and suppose some time to think about, what are the preparation that you need to make? How are you gathering evidence? If you participate, you also get a toolkit to help you. So, you know, something to really think about if you are sort of listening to this and thinking, you know, that, you know, I need to think about this. I need to do something about this. I need to be planning, you know, where am I going to start? So, you know, attending their webinar. Worth knowing as well that if you're part of a big organization, you can also commission us to come and deliver it just for you as a team, as a team of managers, typically between sort of 20 and 40 people. We can deliver it straight to you. And in the show notes, there will be details about how you can do that. So worth having a look at, isn't it, really, Wendy?
Absolutely, definitely is. And of course, we've also got our Good and Outstanding Inspection Toolkit.
Yeah.
And we've revised that to include a whole section on the single assessment framework. So you can actually look at all of the I and we statements, and you can select what type of service you are. So if you're like Maddie and work in a home care service, then you can select that. And many of the examples that will be given are around home care and the sorts of ways that you can gather evidence. But similarly, if you're residential services, if you're a learning disability service, you can choose that and look at particularly how the new single assessment framework might be might happen in your area.
Yeah, and you can go in and you can look at the individual quality statements. Obviously, Maddie was talking about the well-being quality statement, yeah. So you can look at that quality statement and then you say, well, what are the things that other people have used as evidence? What are the, you know, latest guidances around? You know, what are the best practices you can look at? So lots of ideas. I suppose it's just about sparking those ideas with you and your team. You know, don't just look at it yourself. You know, maybe get a group of you having a look at the inspection toolkit and using that as a way of going, well, what are we doing in terms of gathering evidence, and what are we doing in terms of, you know, for instance, around well-being. The other thing that we have is the Good and Outstanding Guide, which is a guide that's available if you are a member. So if you're a Skills for Care registered manager member, you can access this on our portal. It's been something that we have created and updated with the Outstanding Society. So if you are a member, worth having a look at that as well, because again, lots of ideas from both ourselves and the Outstanding Society about gathering evidence and looking at good practice. So that's it for this episode. Thank you very much for joining us. And remember, all the resources that we talked about are in the show notes and on the Skills for Care website. Bye for now.
Bye.